Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know.
Well, good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. We have so much to talk about this evening. We have a wonderful guest that I will introduce in a few minutes. But first, as usual, you know what I have to do. I have to do my housekeeping so that everyone who is listening, those who have been here before, and those who are listening for the first time will know some of the information where they can really enjoy this program again and again. First, let me say to you that you can call in at 1-516-453-6063, and that gets you in to listen to the show and to also, if you press 1, to ask questions. So if you have something to say tonight to my guest, if you just want to send love, that would be absolutely wonderful. We'd love to hear from you this evening. Now, you can also hear back episodes at blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Frank and Fred, T as in Thomas, H as in Harry, and the number 2. We also do an after show afterthoughts, and that will be placed on Godly Entertainment on Facebook and on my channel, Lenny Godfrey Channel, on YouTube. So those are a lot of the things that go on to make this work. Now I want to talk a little bit about what's going to happen next week. Next week, we're going to have Damon Evans of the Jeffersons and Roots and Jesus Christ Superstar Porgy and Bess. And then the day afterwards, I actually am going to do another program. It's for a wonderful virtual theater organization that I belong to called Virtual Arts Group, and you can go to virtualartsproduction.org and see what our show is going to be at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time next Thursday, and it's going to be a discussion of artists. We're going to talk about these wonderful young people from Las Vegas and Orlando, Florida, who have established 2 separate groups, and then we are going to talk about some of the accountings and truths, accurate and inaccurate meanings and discoveries of Juneteenth. So with that all said, I think that I have now occupied you so much with so much information that it's time now to introduce my guest. But before I do that, I want you to hear a little something, and this is a surprise for him.
Last night, I got on the boat to heaven, and by some chance, found I brought my dice along, and there I stood, and I hollered, someone paid me, but the passengers, they
and with that, I would like to introduce my friend, film, stage, phenom, director, mentor, actor, singer, Mr. Ken Page. Hello, Ken Page.
Well, hello, Lenny Godfrey Lee. My dear friend, this is exciting.
Well, thank you. Oh, it's so wonderful to hear that song. I remember sitting in the audience.
You know, when it first started, I said, who is that? I was so young, so clear.
I remember sitting in that audience being so proud of you. Really, really.
Yes.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is from the Broadway production of Guys and Dolls in 1903. Okay.
Yes, when dinosaurs roamed the earth and sang Broadway shows.
Thank you. This is my friend Ken Page, who is one of my oldest friends in the business. And in fact, I knew him before I knew my husband. And that's saying something, as I've been married quite a number of years now. And now we want to talk tonight about the impact, Ken, that the arts has had on your life, on our friendships, on your career. But I want to start at the very beginning, if I may. So
yes.
I want to talk about you and school, because I know that education is a very important part of your life, and we'll get to that later, because I know that you are involved in programs, especially at the Muni and all of that. But how did it start with you in school and the influence? I believe you said your mother's influence of playing music all the time, or an eclectic grouping of music, really influenced you. So talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, you know, in our house, music, first of all, even before my mother's influence, music, my grandmother, my family, nobody sang or nobody was in show business, but music was always a part of our climate, that's how I would put it. And it was blues music mostly, you know, Muddy Waters, B.B. King, and so forth. So that's really the root of my musical leanings. And
yes.
Then when my mother was in her early 20s and so forth, and I was in my early whatever, you know, in retrospect, I'd have to say she was a little bit of a bohemian, because being an African-American woman in the late 50s, early 60s, her musical tastes were Harry Belafonte, Nina Simone, Dave Brubeck, along with Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson, Mahalia Jackson, you know. So there was a real full platter of music that I was used to hearing in our home. And those were my influences. People often ask the song Try to Remember from the Fantastics, and, you know, my associate with the show at different points. But I said, no, the first time I heard Try to Remember was on Harry Belafonte's album, The Many Moods of Belafonte, right?
Wow.
So my introduction even to Broadway, even though I didn't know it was Broadway at the time, was through those musical icons of that time, which was presented to me because my mother had that kind of taste. So that's where my real musical taste started, you know, because it really was across the board. I mean, it was everything, you know, Ike and Tina Turner and blah, 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 blah. It was the full spectrum. But on that other end was more music that a lot of other people in our community weren't listening to. Like I said, Nina Simone, Harry Belafonte, you know, that was a little more out there. Needless to say, Dave Brubeck, you know.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Those kind of things on the reach out there were what was the offbeat offering that still is with me today.
Now, you, though, headed up a group, I believe, in school that didn't start off being a group of the arts. I think you all used to, it was an outreach group.
Yes. There was a group in high school called the Catholic Action Club. Is that what you're speaking of? Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Catholic Action Club. And, you know, in an interesting way, it ended up the way it was supposed to be, but it was through the arts that it got there. The group initially was supposed to be for young people in high school to do community-oriented outreach things, you know, go in and help at an elderly people's home or go somewhere and do a cleanup or things like that. And what I became interested, because I had come from an inner-city school, I thought, well, when I was exposed to music and theater, it was brand new to me on a certain level. I had a cousin who was doing it ahead of me, so I wasn't particularly specifically new to it, but it wasn't something that was on offer all the time. So I thought when we did this group, I said, well, what about if we put on plays and brought in kids from the inner city, most of whom had never seen a live play? A performance. So we did Mary Poppins, we did Thoroughly Modern Millie, we did Wizard of Oz, and might I add, patting myself on the back, I wrote the scripts for all of these. And I like to tell people, before Mary Poppins and Thoroughly Modern Millie were made into Broadway musicals, I took the books and adapted them to the stage, and we did them on stage. And, of course, we probably could have been sued to heaven for it, but we did it. And we did it for kids from inner city. They brought them in, they bussed them in. And it was the first time, I'd say for 95% of them, that they ever saw a musical. So, in essence, we did do what was, quote-unquote, the mission of the club, which was Catholic Action, but I made it an arts outreach, along with a group of other people who were equally as devoted to it. But, of course, you know, I was running down the, running down the street with the streamer because I was an advocate of music and theater. But that's what we did. And in the end, it turned out to be a very successful group within the school because we actually were doing something. A lot of groups were sort of, you know, well, we might, we could, we would, but we actually got them there and the kids came and they saw the things and it opened up their world and I felt really good about that, really good about it. And that was high school.
Does that program exist today or is there no Ken Page in order to be the incentive for it?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, of course, that was millions of years ago, but I can't I don't know if the Catholic Action Club still exists at my high school. Mm-hmm. But I think more than likely, because most of the people who were involved in the group were in my class, there were a couple of behind me, and not to cast any dispersions, but if you don't have a leader, it sort of falls apart a little bit. So I think when I graduated and the other people in my class who were part of it graduated, I think it sort of dissipated. And it might have gone back to being whatever it had been before, but I'm not sure. And I don't even know if it exists now at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, where does the Muni fit into your life now at this point in time? Was the Muni, were you a student at the Muni at this point, or did it come a little bit later? Give me kind of a timeline, Ken.
A timeline. Well, I was aware because the Muni, of course, was always, it was at that time called the St. Louis Municipal Opera. Hello.
Ah.
And, yeah, the whole title, you know, shortened to the Muni about 20 more years ago. But at any rate, I had been to the Muni, the Municipal Opera, with my best friend's mother, he and myself and his sister, to see, the first thing I think I saw was Oklahoma with Robert Horton, who I think was on one of those Western shows on TV.
Oh, yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my first exposure to it. So I was aware of it, and this was when I was about 11. And then going on through the years, we went back. I saw Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway. They brought their company in from Broadway to St. Louis for a week. Yes, and Hello Dolly to play for a week at the Muni. So that was the first time I saw African Americans on stage in a musical. That was my first time seeing, and that was Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway. And, of course, the rest of that amazing cast, Emily Yancey, Rasalalalala, I can't think of get his name right, but he was Jack Crowder at the time.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Winston DeWitt Hemsley, and one Mabel King was in it, and wonderful, wonderful people.
Thelma
and that was
Carpenter,
my first exposure.
Yes,
Thelma Carpenter was Pearl Bailey's understudy. Exactly, exactly.
Yes.
And I think she might have played Mrs. Rose, the lady who comes through before she sings, before the parade passes.
Yes.
But at any rate, she was definitely Pearl's understudy. But so that was my first association with the Muni. By the time I was in high school, I was going, you know, with people, kids, and we would go on our own. And my senior year, I had auditioned for the Muni Ensemble for like 3 to 4 years in a row. I forget now, but I think it was at least 3 to 4 years. And, you know, your voice is changing, and I was a tenor, not even a real baritone tenor at that time. I was really a tenor. And, you know, you sing, I always sing, If I Loved You, and I would always crack on the high note. Year after year for like 3 years, how I love you. And they said, oh, that's okay, come back next year. You know? And I said, I'll be back. Well, finally, the summer after my senior year, I went back. I sang If I Loved You. My voice had matured. I'd been studying voice at that point for over a couple of years. And I got in. So my professional association started, I think, as in 1973. And the first year, they called me up and they said, you know, you're been cast. The show was South Pacific with Mary Travers of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Earl Wrightson, who was an opera singer, and Teresa Merritt as Bloody Mary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they called me and they said, you know, you have a fitting on Tuesday. And I said, well, I'm just in the ensemble. They said, no, you're playing Stew Pot. You have a fitting on Tuesday. So it turned out to be my first professional job, and my first professional role on stage. I think I got that because, you know, one of the teachers was involved with our school and his wife was the choreographer. You know, people knew of what I could do, and I'm sure they passed on because they just gave me the part. I never read for it or anything. And that sort of started me on that road of you know, character parts and doing things. So right away, my first job, I was already performing and acting in a character. I wasn't just in the ensemble. So that really started me off on the right road at the Muni. And that kind of is how it fits in at that particular time. And I did it 2 summers in a row before I went to New York. And at that time, they used to bring in big stars, as I said, Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway. I did a production of Take Me Along with Gene Kelly. We did Man of La Mancha and Fiddler on the Roof with Herschel Bernardi. So at that time, they used to bring in big stars to do the shows. And, you know, you get a real sense of the business when you're performing with real professionals like that. It really elevates your whole awareness, you know. So I feel very lucky to be in that kind of training in 2 years.
You know? Yeah, I want the audience to know that Muni is in St. Louis.
Yes. It's the largest outdoor theater in the country. It seats 11,000 people.
Mm-hmm. And you've referred to it as your theatrical home. However, we haven't gotten you out of St. Louis yet, and I've got to get you to St. Louis, to New York, to L.A. So you know I'm going to move you along.
Yes, I'm with you.
Tell me about going to New York. How did that happen? What took you to New York? What shows took you to New York? What job?
Well, that second summer of my ensemble years there, they again were bringing shows in from New York. They were closing them down on Broadway for a week and bringing the entire production to the Muni. And I tell people that, and they don't believe me. I said, no, think about it. There's 11,000 seats at the Muni. The biggest Broadway houses seat like 2,000 people. So they would make a month's salary or a month's worth of profit in a week at the Muni, you know.
Sure.
So that's why they could do it. So, and they made their sets there and everything. They copied them. But that summer, the second summer, I won't bore you with all the two, but a lot of shows came in. One of them was a show called Seesaw, which was not a huge hit on Broadway. It did well, and it was certainly notable, but it wasn't a huge hit, but they brought it into St. Louis, and it was all about New York, and it was a musical version of the play, Two for the Seesaw, about this dancer falling in love with this politician and so on. And somehow it just represented everything that I hoped that New York was. They had an opening number, Seesaw, which was all New York people in the streets, and they were all in white, and they were behind them was this great projection of the city, and I, honest to goodness, just got mesmerized. I mean, I already was, because, you know, I was into musicals and so forth up to that point, and already in the ensemble there. But that show, for some reason, really hooked me on having to go to New York. So after that summer is when I said, that's it. I'd left college after 2 years, and I was in a major in the theater department, and I said, I'm going to go to New York. And my wonderful professor, who was a mentor as well, shut the door to his office. He said, I think you're making the right decision. He said, but you can't tell anybody I told you that because I'm supposed to tell you to stay in school. He said, but I think what you'll learn there in the next 3 years I would have had, you know, in front of me, or 2 years, he said, you will learn that in New York in a year or less. Because you'll be actively doing. And if you continue to pursue knowledge, you'll learn everything you need to know. So I left and I went to New York after that season, that September, I guess. I got on the train and came to New York. And Seesaw, as you asked, Seesaw was the inspiration for my coming.
Yes.
And later on, after I got there, just jump ahead a little bit, people like Judy Gibson, Tommy Tune, Bayark Lee, Tommy Walsh, all these people that I got to know in New York later were all in Seesaw.
So
it was one of those things where, you know, when I would see them or meet them or get to work with them, I was like, you have no idea the influence you had on me. And they were all like, Seesaw? Oh, my God, that show. You know, I said, yeah, that show. But all of those quote-unquote gypsies, the best in the business when you think about it, they were all in that show.
Yes. Now, all right. So I'm moving you along because eventually I need you to go. I don't want to jump to Ragtime Blues, mm-hmm. but I need to go a little bit before Ragtime Blues, because isn't that Pearly? Isn't that Pearly?
Yes. That was my first New York, well, it wasn't my first New York job was with Fanfare Theater Ensemble, Children's Theater, and we did a production of Huckleberry Finn.
Huckleberry Finn. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
We traveled around the Eastern Seaboard, which was wonderful. And I always like to mention them because they were a beautiful, human-hearted group of people. They were real thespians, you know. And they were doing children's theater, but it was very high-gear children's theater. And they lived for it. You know, they absolutely lived for it. And they passed to me. It was like coming out of school and working with them first was the perfect introduction to New York, because they were diehard New Yorkers. They were real theater people. Their theater was down on East 13th Street, and they lived in the theater, was part of it. You know, they literally lived in the theater. Yeah, yeah, the prop room was part of their, but they were the loft, you know. And they were amazing people. Joan Shepherd and Evan Thompson were their names. And they took me under their wing. They didn't just hire me for the job. They made sure I was eating. Every day at rehearsal, Joan would say, "Have you eaten?" And I was like, "Well, how insulting, you know, what thing to ask." And she said to me, you know, and she said to me, "I'm asking you because," she said, darling, "we're actors, and sometimes we don't eat. So I'm asking you if you've eaten because we can feed you."
And that's wonderful.
Yes, and I was never, thank God, knock wood, hungry enough to need to be fed. But the fact that they were open and able to do it, and they didn't have a lot, but whatever they had, they were willing to share. So I like to mention them previous to Pearly, which was my first sort of big job, you know. And it started out as a winter stock production down in Florida at the Coconut Grove Playhouse. We all remember that, those of us from the day. It was a great job to get because you went down there in the wintertime from New York to do a show in the sunshine in Miami. It was great. But we started out there as a, you know, one of their, and they did everything there at the time. You know, a lot of shows were done there. And the show was so successful. Of course, it had been on Broadway, and there'd been a national tour, and there'd been a second national tour. And when we did the winter stock production, it was so successful. They said, "Well, they want us to come to Philadelphia." And then they say, "Oh, they want us to come to Washington, D.C. So it turned from a winter stock. We went back. We did it twice at the Grove. And it turned from a winter stock production to a third national tour. And then we took the tour to L.A. for the first time. The show had never been there. So we were the L.A. premier company of Pearly, which is sort of a footnote since it had been around so long, you know.
And
and that got me to California for the first time. But Pearly... walk him up.
Well, you know, the theater is such a wonderful vehicle by which we see the world. And a lot of people don't realize that it is an education within itself. And that those of us who are privileged to be able to get those jobs and then, you know, go on the road and see the world because of it. But then you have to go back and see where you were, because a lot of the times you're in those cities, you're working a whole lot. So you don't see all the city all the time. But you get the taste of it. You do get the taste of it.
Yes, you get the taste of it. I remember it was Jeffrey Holder who told me, he says, "Anybody offers you a job traveling with you, say yes. Don't even ask what the job is. Just say yes."
Just say yes.
And I took that to heart.
One of my first jobs right out of college was to go to Amsterdam. And I spent, you know, months living there, you know, doing Josephine and Marlene Dietrich. So, you know, it was, and right now when they show Amsterdam, I still remember walking to the theater and the Frascati Theater and all of those kind of things. It's a wonderful experience.
Sure. Well, it changes your life. And because we were so young when that was happening, what it really was doing, it changed our lives, but it was also forming us.
Yes.
And informing us, because you couldn't go to Amsterdam or California or any other places that things.
Exactly.
And at that time, shows really did take people out of the country and all over the world internationally.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And also, it was also a time when African Americans were still, I won't say we were a novelty everywhere, but we were still considered something that was of interest. So, you know, when shows were traveling.
Yes, and usually sometimes I would always be plucked into one where I would be the black person there, and you know, that was the black moment in the show, you know.
Right.
And it serves though to open you up to you know, you then understand other cultures, you have a greater understanding. That's what the arts really does for us who are in it, and it does those for those people who come to see us. because we do bring about us a certain culture, and people have those kinds of questions. Now I'm skipping. I got to skip because I'm going to skip to the When I Met You, which is Amos Theater, Rosetta Lenoir,
right.
Jay Bender. I mean, everyone there, and we did Ragtime Blues.
Yes.
Which so
I don't know, you probably know this, but I went there with our friend, Helen Gelza, she was at the time, because she was auditioning. And we did everything together, as you know. And she said, oh, I have an audition this afternoon, and I had nothing to do. I said, well, I'll go with you. So I went with her, and I'm sitting there, and then God bless her, Rosetta Lenoir looks at me. She goes, well, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a singer. I'm an actor. She said, well, you know something you can sing? And I forget what I sang. I said, yeah. And I sang something, probably If I Loved You, knowing me, right? And she said, you want a job? And I thought, what, you know, what drummer, Willis, you know. She said, you want a job? I said, in this show? She said, yes, we have a role for the conductor, Scott Joplin's opera conductor, William Vodary, as you remember, who was a real person. I didn't know that at the time. And she said, you're perfect for it. You want a job? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you're hired.
That's how
I got it. And I didn't even go to the audition. I didn't know anything about the show.
So, it was my second audition out of college. And the first one, I will tell people, I always say, you know, you're my second oldest friend. The first one was a play by Christopher Durang, The Nature and Purpose of the Universe.
Right.
I did. It was a play, no music, but of course I was an imposing character there. And then this one I auditioned for it while I was doing that play. And I went in, sang a song, and I got back to the theater, and I called my service. Remember those things? Remember
call your service or the service, what you call, you know. Yeah.
Yes, call the service. And there it was. They were there. Yes, we'd like you to be Belle, you know. And it was just a wonderful opportunity, but I've made
Well, you know, you think about it, Lenny, and not only for us individually, but you think about the group of people. Now, you don't become close friends with everybody you work with.
Exactly.
But I think about you. Of course, I knew Helen, Sondra Reeves, Yolanda Graves, Jay Bender, you know, and these are people that have been part of, I can say, our lives and certainly mine. All these years.
That was many, many, I mean, many decades ago.
Hey, Menya.
I mean, you know, I think about Louise Heath. Yes. I think about Fred
Louise
Hardy.
Heath, of course.
You know, I don't know where Fred Hardy is. I'd love somebody to, if you know the name, and you know the man, to tell me where Fred Hardy is. The wonderful James Moody was in it. And of course, Yoli. And do you remember Andy Hofsteller?
Yes, I do, of course. He was one of
the ragtimers,
I think they were called.
Yes, he was a ragtimer. I really thought that show was going to go. I really thought it had such great potential and such great. And that Mitch Douglas, I found out a few weeks ago when I was doing another show about ragtime, had passed away last year, just last year.
He passed away.
You know, but he wrote a lovely script.
It was beautiful. And to hear lyrics to those wonderful melodies of Scott Joplin was really, I mean, I still hum them to myself. Are you going to be eating a pie when you want to think in the plum? All of those, you know.
All of them, you know, because I really do remember, sometimes gets low, sometimes gets blue, traveling along. I mean, that was with so it was really lovely to be able to experience that so young in my career, and with you all who had remembered. Now, you had been on tour, and then of course there was Yoli Graves.
Yes.
Yolanda Graves, as anyone knows of her, is still one of the most wonderful personalities in the theater.
Absolutely.
And
honestly, one of the funniest women I've ever met. I mean, it's almost like, had she gone, well, she did, you know, somebody else took, she said, doll stole my act. But at any rate, we'll leave that alone.
Yes,
but she did.
Leave it alone, yes.
Sort of stand up, you know, and she was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I saw her, she had myself and the very same Helen and her sister howling because she told us a story about her sister who worked on Rikers Island, and there was a woman who would hang out, you know, she had one leg, and she would hang out and try to get money from people when they came by, you know, when they were out there. I don't know what they were doing out there. And that she told us this story about this woman who said, don't give that woman any money. She's got a leg. She said she's got a leg. It's upstairs in her apartment. She takes it off to come down here and get money. She's got a leg because the government gave her a leg last year. She had us howling, telling us the story.
Oh, my gosh.
So for about a year, I wore it out. I would always say when somebody would say, oh, I don't know if I can get it. I'd say, oh, look, she got a leg. You know, don't give her none. Yolanda Graves. Yes.
Yolanda Graves, who's wonderful, just wonderful. All right, and then after that, the next thing I knew, you were soaring on Broadway in so many musicals, Paige. And you know, I'm so happy and proud to say that. You know, there's Guys and Dolls, and then there's The Wiz, and then there's, you know, of course, Amos Behaving, and then there's Cats and Nothing But the Blues. And I mean, I can go on and on because there's some that I missed because I wasn't here and you were here.
Right.
And it's just the influence that that has had on you. How do you think the theater has changed since those days? Now, we were both on Broadway at the same time. You were doing Ain't, and I was doing Yubi. And I remember our first day, you came to the theater with flowers for all of us.
Oh, my goodness, I did. I don't remember that.
Oh, yes, because I said, Ken, Paige, what are you doing? You said, oh, I'm bringing you all flowers. You came there with flowers.
Oh, that's nice. Wasn't he nice? I don't remember that. I'm glad you do.
Oh, I do. It was so wonderful because I hadn't seen you in a long time. I'd seen you in Guys and Dolls, and then I hadn't seen you for a while. I had gone away and been on the road, and then you had gone and done other musicals, and that was the first time I had seen you in a very long time. And
right,
it was
right.
Wonderful, and for you to be so gracious. So that
well,
kind
you know,
of
I'll tell you something, Lenny, just as a footnote, which is underneath everything, we as a group, as a generation, we were raised by, or at least by example, of the originators like Cab Calloway, Pearl Bailey, Lena Horne, Diane Carroll, the list goes on.
Yes,
and these people taught me literally how to be generous. It was always about, look, whoever the next group is, you let them know you support them because it's hard enough for us to get in the door anyway. That's what they said to me. I'll never forget it. You know, Emmett Babe Wallace, who played Arvide in Guys and Dolls, had been in the movie of Stormy Weather. And, you know, whenever he spoke, we just froze and listened. Because you think these are not people who learned down the road somewhere. These are the originators of our art form as
African-Americans.
And there was nobody before them.
No, many times they were the people that we watched when we could see them that gave us
inspiration.
Absolutely.
They were the only people to see.
That's right. And so now, you know, you grow up and we got the tail end of it. And a lot of us got a chance to really work with these people and sit down at their feet and just listen to some of the
wonderful enough to share with you. They bow down and worship me like you hear people literally say now, bow down. You think, bow down? You've only been around 10 minutes. Bow down? You know, but hey, there you go. And these were people who had, you know, forged and breached and broke ceilings and broke down doors, and they were generous.
And not in an era where it was not only hard in show business, but it was hard to be black.
It was hard, period. T-O-B-Y, you know.
Yeah. You know,
T-O-B-A,
I mean,
actually.
T-O-B-A. It was just a difficult time, and so many times I just worshipped the opportunity when I would have to be in the room with these people that I had seen on TV or in a movie or something, and just listen,
And it was a privilege. And now that we're where we are and most of them are long gone, you now seriously realize what a privilege it was.
Exactly.
Because we're the link, which I guess we'll talk about later. But, you know, the people that came behind us now by two or three generations, these people to them are just somebody they read about in a book. only.
Yeah, exactly.
They were so not around by the time
exactly.
they came.
You know, or they write about them. And I said, but you don't know who you're writing about. I knew these people, and they were just phenomenal people. And the fact that they held on long enough for me to know them, because I was
right.
a baby, and they were still here, still doing it, still doing all those wonderful things.
Sure,
it is just phenomenal. You know, now, I have to say, I cannot leave that period of time before just with the saying the name of our dear, dear, loving friend, Amelia McQueen,
yeah.
who we both loved so much, who we now, she's gone from us, but who influenced us and who had said to me at one point, and I say this all the time, she was a little witch. I don't know any other thing to say because I loved her dearly. I sent her a video of a panel of some of these wonderful, wonderful Broadway enthusiasts and artists that had taken pauses in their careers because of something that had happened, health-wise or something personal. And I wanted her to see it because she was going through a moment in her life. And you know what she said to me? Did she listen to the message that I'm saying? You know, this is what you... No, she said to me, Linda Godfrey, you're going to have a show. I said, oh, a queen. I'm trying to show. But
to give you some support.
No.
Well, you know, I said on her memorial video for her memorial, and this couldn't be truer. I said, Amelia literally lived with one foot in the spirit world and one foot in the... In our world, so to speak.
In our world, yes.
Because she really was that person. It wasn't make-believe and it wasn't put on.
No,
she really was that deep.
Really
actually, to tell you the truth, she was much deeper than people realize with her spiritual thing.
Yes.
And when I say that, not only in her practice of Nichiren Buddhism, but also just as we knew from the ancestors, she had all of that.
Yes, we did.
And it wasn't a joke. She really did.
She did, you know, I mean, and she was a very spiritual person, and I miss her as you do every single day. And I just couldn't bypass that period of time that we're in now without saying a word of love.
Well, as
to
we
her.
Said, we call your name, you know,
yes,
we must continue
we
to
name.
Do that. So many, but especially who we just lost this past year. To me, and this is not in deference to anybody, but I don't even know how to describe our, you know, I think people say soulmates, but I think we were spirit mates more than,
I
you know what I mean? And that, to me, there's a difference.
Yes, exactly.
I remember we were doing Amos Behaven rehearsals off Broadway, and I had been in The Wiz, and I'd been in blah, 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 blah. So I had 50 cents instead of a quarter, you know? And I was taking a taxi back from the east side, and she was waiting on the bus. And I, you know, we were standing there. I said, well, what are you? She said, oh, no, I'm waiting on the bus. I take the whatever it was, 73rd Street bus across, and I take the number to something downtown. I said, well, I'm going across town. You can at least go that far, and then you can go downtown. No, no, as she would say, right? No, no,
yes.
I'm fine.
No,
I said, now, listen, I'm taking a taxi across town. Why should you stand here when I'm going to ride across town in a taxi? Get in the cab. You know, and that is where our, because, you know, you don't know people if you don't know them.
No, you don't.
And that's how our friendship started. And from
then
on, I'd say, listen, and she was a little bit, I said, look, the day will come when you'll be able to afford a cab, and I won't possibly. I said, and I hope you'll give me a ride, you know.
There you go.
And it did happen, by the by, at a point in time. But that was how our real kinship started. Just there on that corner at 73rd and like 3rd or whatever it was, you know.
You know, you think about it. And I knew her. A lot of people think, well, what show did you do? I never worked with McQueen. I knew her through you. You know, we would be friendly. And then McQueen came by and then McQueen and I started talking, you know.
Right.
And before you knew it, there it was. Well, Lenny got, and she always called my whole name. Lenny got me. I went, yes, McQueen.
Yes, McQueen.
Such a devotion. Such devotion to her. I love her. I love her.
Well, you
I
know what?
Her.
I'll say this in I guess, finality, and we'll move on. But she is so alive in our hearts and in our memories. And I mean that literally. Every memory we can think of going back 40 years, she's part of it. From personal things to show business, everything. And so yes. I have to say, while I thought truly, I said, oh, my God, will I ever be able to go on without my friend? She is so alive and so present. Mm-hmm. And knowing mm-hmm. her, like you said, the witch that she was, and we mean white yes. witch in that sense,
yes,
that
yes.
she really yes. is present. She's not gone. She's just not here.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's
now,
how
Kate,
I leave it, you know?
You know, yeah, I love her, and I knew that I could not talk to you without
yes.
saying my word with her.
Absolutely.
But now, see,
absolutely.
Now we have less than 20 minutes left.
Oh, my God, see how time flies?
Yes, I told you this, and we haven't gotten out of New York yet. And
I know. yes, Lord.
And influence, I mean, you know, but now you started directing when? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, to be honest, I started directing in high school, didn't I? With Mary Bobbins
yes.
and Sterling Reitman.
Yes.
And then in college, of course, you had to do that as part of your curriculum, directing and
mm-hmm.
so forth. I directed
mm-hmm.
a production
mm-hmm.
of Barefoot in the Park
mm-hmm.
and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it's hard to pinpoint when I actually started. I'll put it this way. I wish I had done more. But knock on wood, I was fortunate enough to be working most of the time. So I didn't have, as you know, as a director, it takes months of prep and this and that to do things. And if you're starting a new project, it takes even longer than that. And I was working, so I never had a lot of time to put into directing, but I
mm-hmm.
always kept it out there. I always tried to do something, a reading, something to keep my muscle exercised as a director, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 8 or 9 years, I started writing and directing, which has been really wonderful. I enjoy that a lot. And here in St. Louis, I've had two original pieces produced that I wrote, one, Sublime Intimacy, about dancers and people who love them, and
mm-hmm.
the other was a wonderful piece, and I say that because of the people in it, really, called Café Chanson, which was a story I made up about a World War II situation in Paris right at the end of the war and so forth. And both were produced here and did wonderfully, and I'm knock on wood, hopefully can do them again. But I feel very fortunate to now, I feel myself, not that I'm giving up performing, but I do feel myself moving more towards wanting to do more directing
mm-hmm.
and writing. First
well,
of all, how to get dressed.
Well, my experience with you as a director, you remember we did.
Yes,
you had me.
Nightlife, of course.
Nightlife. And there I was with Miss Eartha Kitt.
Yes, you were wonderful.
Whoa.
Yeah, you know, and my thing is, I remember calling again my mentor, Jeffrey Holt. I said, well, Jeffrey, I'm doing this piece called Nightlife. Is it somebody else's piece? I said, no, I put it together. Good, it's yours, you own it, it's yours. I said, yes, it's mine. And I told him people were in it. He thought of everybody, you and everybody. And he said his last words to me were, which I carry with me always, he said, what took you so long?
Yeah. There you go.
And
go.
I was, you know, left me kind of dumbstruck. I thought, well, I don't know. I'm doing it now. Good. You'll be fine. And don't worry about what everybody thinks. Do what you want to do.
Exactly. Always.
And they
always
stay with. And when I came to St. Louis, there's a wonderful theater doyen here. Her name is Mary Sprouse. She owns the Fox Theater and so on and so forth. Lovely, lovely, lovely lady who loves Josephine Baker, by the way. But at any rate, that's a side point. Said to me when I got to St. Louis, she said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I want to keep doing what I do, first of all. I said, but I want to, you know, write and direct some things. She said, just do what you want. Don't worry what anyone thinks, second time. So I think that is the word I would leave with anybody who might be listening.
Yes.
If you're going to write, you're going to direct, even performing, don't worry about what everybody thinks. Follow
no,
your
you
heart,
can.
Follow your spirit,
you
know? You
know, I find that, and God bless us, we are in a world where people designate who they want you to be. And that's a
yeah.
wonderful thing, but you can't fall into that for them. I love them for it, but I think, you know, if you know yourself, you know what your potential is, and sometimes, you know, you have to go beyond where they think you are. I mean, and I understand with
well,
the
I think you,
and all of that, how wonderful it feels, you know.
Well, you leaven it in. I'm doing 54 Below, September 7th, 2021,
mm-hmm.
coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And
all
I bring
right,
it up not only
that,
not only
that.
To hey to plug myself, but
yes.
also a good friend of mine, Richard J. Alexander, whom I've known since 1975.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the road with me, Nobody Knows, and I was on the road with He Says, Guys and Dolls. I think it was whatever, you know. I think he was in Zoot Suit, but we go back and forth about that. Anyway.
Yes.
He's going to direct my show. Now, Richard, just a short, he directs Barbara Streisand's concerts and Bette Midler
mm-hmm.
and everybody you name, he's worked with him. And I only
yes.
say that because that's what he does. he's doing my show because we're old friends. And the reason I say it even doubly is because it's the first time, other than maybe twice, that I put myself in someone else's hands to the point of listening to what other people say. That's what I was
vibrating
on. And I'm really ready. I said, listen, Richard, I think, A, you're talented and you do what you do very well, but you also know me. So I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to heat. Now, you know, I ain't going to do nothing I don't want to do, but I'm also going to let myself be influenced by what someone else thinks of what I, because I do believe you reach sometimes where you don't see yourself the way other people do, to a positive, but it has to be people who know you well, not just anybody's opinion. And sometimes they have a perception of you beyond what you see of yourself. And I'm excited
to see what that's going to be. That's the trust. But that's trusting.
Yes.
You know, you have to get to a point where, you know, you trust someone, and it's like that the circle of trust. You just kind of lean back and you know that they will catch you, you know.
Well, you
but
know, they have to be
long
worthy.
Years.
Well, I think it's like Betty Davis who said, people said, why were you so difficult with directors? She said, I wasn't difficult with directors. If they weren't good enough, I couldn't listen to them because I knew a lot myself. So if they didn't know more than I and have something to offer, then I had to make sure I survived in the situation. And I certainly have felt that way. I've worked with people where I, you know, it's like, look, I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about.
And not that they weren't good.
They just weren't better than you needed them to be.
You know, sometimes they're just not good for you.
I've
worked with people that I admired greatly and couldn't wait, you know, to be in the room with them. And then when I realized, oh, you're not good for me because you've already, you know, you've got this established thought about what I should do, and you're not being flexible about it. So sometimes, you know, people are not good for you, and you have to realize that.
Well, you know what I've also found, Lenny? The best people, meaning directors, you know, whatever, the best people are always flexible. That's why they're the best.
They are. You know, all of a sudden they'll go, oh, well, yeah, let's try that. Let's do that. Let's try that. That's all I'm looking for people who want to try something. Especially when you're directing, you expect your actors to come in with something. And if they come in with something that you hadn't thought about, oh, how wonderful it is.
It's a collaborative. And I think that's the misunderstanding in a lot of situations.
Yes.
A lot of directors feel it's all about what they think. And in the end, they're responsible. There's that. We both know that as directors. But at the same time, if you're not willing to be collaborative, you're cutting off your hand. While you could have two hands, you got one hand. You're cutting off your leg.
Exactly.
Instead of having two legs, you got a leg. You could have one, you know, and it does make a difference.
Now, you know, listen, I have to say also, I want to talk a minute about the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes.
All right. Now, that was given to you 2019, I believe?
Yes, it was.
All right. By what organization, Paige? Just quickly, now because we're down to 10 minutes.
Yes.
I'm never going to get to L.A.
It's the St. Louis Arts and Education Council of St. Louis, and they've been giving them out for some years, and I had been the host of the show for a couple of two, 3 years. And, you know, I did think in my little heart of hearts, I thought, well, this is wonderful being the host. But hell, why don't they give me in it? But then I thought to myself, well, maybe you don't deserve it, you know.
Yeah.
And when they had called me up and they said, you're one of our recipients this year, because they give them out for different things, like teachers and achievements in different areas. And they said, we're giving you a lifetime achievement in the arts. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, that's wonderful. You know, I really, because I took it seriously, and because it was St. Louis, they had an interpretation, let's say, of the full arc of my artistic life, not just the professional Broadway, you know, because I was schooled here, and I learned here, and I trained here. So they had a very different approach, and it was very, very lovely. And every year, I just went to it to you two weeks ago Monday, and every year they give it to somebody else in terms of lifetime achievement and to all the other people, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And they give you this beautiful award that's made by this artist, and there's a different one every year. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. And then you're on that list of people that have been honored, and there you go. You know, you become an alumni of the whole thing, you know. But it was a wonderful, wonderful honor, and I was very appreciative.
Good. Now I'm gonna cap that up, and I'm gonna move in a jet stream way to L.A. You did television and film there. We both were on television at the same time. You did South Central, and I was doing 704 Hauser.
Right.
Then I want to go up to right now. I want you to listen to something. This is why I would just listen to this, and I want you to explain to the audience how this came to being, this interpretation.
Don't do this. Naughty children never get any...
I think he might be too big.
No, he's not. If he can go down a chimney, he can...
Santa Claus, huh? Ooh, I'm really scared. So you're the one everybody's talking about. You're joking. I can't believe my eyes. You're joking me. You gotta be. This can't be the right guy. He's ancient. He's ugly. I don't know which is worse. I might just split a seam now if I don't die laughing first. Mr. Oogie Boogie says there's trouble close at hand. You better pay attention now, cause I'm the boogeyman.
All right.
Yes. Mr. Oogie Boogie,
Yes. I could not.
Well, you know, interesting enough, Lenny, you've known me all these years, and I find out, I didn't realize this, but that is what I am now most known for.
Yes,
out
I
of all
know.
The things. I said, well, what have we here? That's
exactly.
What I'm, I mean, it's a blessing. I call it the gift that keeps on giving, needless to say, but what a blessing. But it's an interesting thing to be known for something where they only really, I mean, I've done enough personal parents concert things now, they know my face with it, but it's mostly about the vocal, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm most known for, and that's how IMDb and all these things, most known for his performance of Oogie Boogie. And I said, is that right? I don't know. Well, I'll take it, you know.
Well, yes, you must take, you know, to be remembered for anything is a gift. To be many things that you have done.
To be remembered.
Now, I want you to say, and I've heard, you know, I guess by now you know that I've been listening to you for a number of days in different interviews and everything like that. And you talk about the voice and how you created this voice. Tell me about it in a minute or so, because I just want to, if there's anybody who has any questions, I want them to be able to call in and get some questions. But tell me your
The way they asked me, they said what, you know, what would be my take on it. First of all, I should say it started because my lawyer, Mark Sindroff, also represents Danny Elfman, who wrote the score. And they were looking for someone who was Cab Calloway-esque, or who could bring, because the number was inspired by St. James Infirmary by Cab Calloway, and on and on and on. And he said, I have a client who I think is perfect for you. So that's the short version of the story. So anyway, I ended up doing it. And for me, the combination of the character comes from a little bit of Cab Calloway, a little bit of Fats Waller, a little bit of myself, and my voice idol is Mercedes McCambridge, who did the voice of the demon in The Exorcist.
And when I told
them that, they said, okay, that's just weird enough for us, you know. And I said, if I go too, and the Cowardly Lion, you know. I said, if I go too far in any direction, you'll bring me back. I said, but I'm just going to go all over the place, and that's what it'll be. And when you take all of that and pour it in a thing and shake it up, that's what Oogie Boogie is, you know. A little bit of New Orleans is on it, you know. And all that sort of thing. And it really, and I tell this quick story that I met Mercedes McCambridge completely by accident at a mall in La Jolla, go figure that. And I told her the story that I was doing this and blah, 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 and that she was my voice idol. And at first she was a little reluctant, and then we really started to talk. And I told her how much I admired her work in The Exorcist, and I told her some things that I'd gotten from the voicing and stuff. And she took me by the arm, and she said, "You understand." And I thought, oh, oh, you know. And that was, I said, oh, my God. But it was almost like the universe brought her to me right in front of me. Because I was a huge fan, and not, you know, the movie's the movie and it's all the things and so forth, but her voice work is amazing because it really affects you way more than you think, you know.
Yes, it does.
I think she should have been nominated for an Academy Award for it because, you know, but they didn't know what to do with the voice. It was like Linda Blair got an Oscar nomination. God bless her, and she was wonderful. But that voice was, as they say, that voice.
That is,
you know,
that is really what, because the voice came out of her, so that's what made it all real for us.
Absolutely.
You know, that whole thing.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know if they were as aware about all of those intricacies to really make us aware of it to be award worthy.
Well, not at that time. Because
now
we've seen the resurgence of animated movies and all the things. So voice work is now considered a real thing, you know, because, of course, now mostly stars get all of those roles in animated movies. So there was a whole group of people who did voice work in animation. And even for Disney, there were people. And none of those people, and I say this because it's a real campaign of mine, they don't work that way anymore because they're first offered to all of the known name marquee stars. And those people did that as that's what they did. It
that's
wasn't
they
something
did
they did on
living.
The off.
Yes. Creating creating those structures. And it is really a collaboration of finding something in one point and something in another point and putting it together and making that original sound for yourself, that very, very special sound that belongs only to you. And people did that for a living. It is unfortunate that doesn't happen as often
anymore.
And not
to say that everybody who does it who are named marquee people are not good at it, but not
great.
All of them
no,
are.
Exactly. But they're, you know, I'd like to hear voices that I hadn't heard before. I can recognize people when they, you know, I know their voices.
The switch.
Oh,
you hit the nail on the head. It used to be the voice of the character was the star of whatever it was. Now the star's voice is what makes the character.
Exactly.
And that's a different approach, you know.
That's exactly right. You know, so this has been such a wonderful hour talking to you. Believe it or not, we're almost down to 2 minutes. Please.
Yes, yes.
And I told you that it was going to go quickly, especially if we started getting into a conversation. And there's so much more to cover, but I really wanted people to understand the influence that the arts at the very beginning of your life, how that happened. Wait a minute. I think I have a question here. Just quickly, let's see. Hello. Welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Your name and where you're from, please.
Hi, I'm Debbie, and I'm from New York City. And I'm calling because I'm such a fan, Ken Page. I saw you in The Wiz, Ain't Misbehaving. I still can see the commercial that played on TV to introduce everyone to Ain't Misbehaving and you singing. It's wonderful. But I wanted to talk about the kind of person I am because when you talked about growing up with all that great music, it was introduced to me almost the same way by my parents, and I love theater. And I go and I see these 10 to 12 shows a year. But I'm no spring chicken, and I know Broadway's coming back. But I'm thinking, what does Broadway need to do to bring me, a person that's a little reluctant, back? I mean, do they need to do a PSA to talk about the sanitizing provisions? What do you think needs to happen before everyone gets back in the theater? Because we're all sitting very, very close together.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I wonder that myself. I've heard everything about Broadway coming back except the protocol, you know.
Yes.
And
I'm with you.
I'm like, and how are we going to do that? Well, I think what's going to happen from what I'm told, I'll share this with you, is that they're saying when you go to the theater, they will have a protocol that you have to follow to go. I think what people like you and I are looking for is that idea of tell me what it is and then I'll know. But I think the way they're approaching it is just say you buy a ticket to go see whatever, you know, and The Temptations. And they will tell you at the box office when you buy the ticket, the protocol for this theater is such and such and such, and we follow these rules and regulations, and you either have to wear a mask or you have to show your vaccination card. Whatever, it will be individual per show. That's what I'm being told. That's how they're doing it. And as far as getting us back there, I think it's like anything at this point. We have to make sure for ourselves personally that it's the protocols that are to our standard personally are being followed, and then we have to take the leap, you know, because otherwise it won't happen.
I'm afraid that I'm going to have to cut you off right there. I'm going to have to thank you so much, Ken Page, for coming in. We will talk a little bit on video in our after show afterthoughts, but I'm going to have to say goodbye for now because the show is just about over. Thank you so much, Ken Page.
It was wonderful, and thank you, and we have to do it again.
Yes, we absolutely do. Here we go. Good night, everyone.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever